I want you to imagine that when you're born, someone downloads a playlist into your mind. And it's, you know, and it's not a playlist of songs and tunes, but a playlist of ideas and beliefs. Mm-hmm. And all our life, we walk around seeing the world through the prism, sometimes the prison, of yeah. those ideas and beliefs. And I think the self-sabotage part comes from all these ideas and beliefs that are so ingrained and subconscious that we get early on from parents, culture, community, that create these limitations and stories about who we are and what we're capable of. And human beings, we operate from that place of autopilot, from habit, you know, from habit and from subconscious. And it's about breaking through that.
Hey everybody, Tamara here with Inside Launch Street Podcast, the place to be to elevate your game, be an everyday innovator, and reach that peak performance and go further, faster in life. Find that value and that uniqueness that you bring. I think that's a little bit of what our discussion is going to give you today. I'm super excited about it. Before I dig in, let me just share with you one of my all-time favorite resources for dialing up my ability to innovate, which I think is one of the key skills in today's competitive and rapidly changing world. It is so easy. You click on it, you log in, you click on it, you hit go, and there's something about this tool that magically transforms my experience. And that is Focus It Will. It's scientifically proven music to enhance productivity, focus, creativity, innovation. I have been a subscriber for, oh my gosh, I don't know, 7 years now, and it's worth every penny. I absolutely love it. And I will tell you, I laugh at myself a little bit because every time I put it on, an hour later, I'm like, that was the most amazing output I've ever had. And then I realize, that's because Focus It Will is on. So we'll put the link in the show notes. Go check it out. All right. With this ability to like get ahead and focus and think about what's in store for the future, really excited for today's guest. Ilan, say hi, introduce yourself, and let's get to it.
All right, thank you, Tamara. Hi, everybody. My name is Ilan Divon. I'm the founder of Divon Academy. And what I do is I'm just passionate about helping young professionals and students transform from often unprepared, unskilled individuals into high-performing, motivated, dedicated, resilient, creative individuals who basically are able to step into and unleash their potential.
And don't you feel like, I'm so glad you said it that way, don't you feel like that is ultimately what all of us really want? We just don't always have the know-how. I mean, we want to feel valued. Yes. We want to contribute, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's that needs hierarchy of six human needs. I know a lot of people talk about it. And the highest need of a human being is growth and contribution. I think our soul is here. We're here to grow. How to do it is often sort of counterintuitive and runs against how we're wired as human beings. And that's why so much of growth is about mindset. We believe that to unleash human potential, you have to unlock the human mind.
I want to ask you, I've got a whole list of questions here, but you said something that I don't want to pass over because I think it's so important. You had said like, we've got these needs and we've got this ability, but we kind of work against ourselves.
Yes.
We just talk more about that because I suspect, and I know I've been here, there's a lot of us out there who go, well, I know I want that, but I seem to self-sabotage quite a bit.
Yeah, so that's a great starting point. I think so many of us, all of us, you know, I'll tell you, we can do this as a little story. You know, yeah. I want you to imagine that when you're born, someone downloads a playlist into your mind. And it's, you know, and it's not a playlist of songs and tunes, but a playlist of ideas and beliefs. Mm-hmm. And all our life, we walk around seeing the world through the prism, sometimes the prison of yeah. those ideas and beliefs. And I think the self-sabotage part comes from all these ideas and beliefs that are so ingrained and subconscious that we get early on from parents, culture, community, that create these limitations and stories about who we are and what we're capable of. And human beings, we operate from that place of autopilot, from habit, you know, from habit and from subconscious. And it's about breaking through that.
So How interesting to think that, well, I was just looking at my phone because I was thinking about my playlist. And I was like, I love how you said that. That's almost like how many songs, beliefs are on my playlist that somebody else added to my playlist. They weren't even mine. Somebody else added them along the way and they don't serve me. That's a really powerful way to think about it. I want to bring it back to work for a second. And because I think all of this then plays into our performance at work and our ability to contribute. But before we get into it on the individual level, I do want to talk about it on the macro level, because I think we're in this really interesting place where, you know, we spent the last 18 months working from home. We've got this digital transformation that's happening, technology that we're using in all these different ways. And we're at a shifting point where we're supposed to now go back to work, add some of what used to be into what is today. How do you see the future of work given all of this change that we've just experienced? Because I think we need to wrap our heads around where we're headed.
So no, that is a fascinating subject, which we are looking at obviously very closely here at Devon Academy. And I look at this all the time and talk about this all the time. You know, the whole concept of work, think about this.
Yeah.
The workplace, work week, work day, it's obsolete. Right? Geography, place, time.
Right.
It doesn't exist. Like the lines between work and pleasure, work and home have been blurred forever. And now obviously working from home. So technology has changed the game in terms of the workforce in general, and the future of the workforce. But the bigger thing that we need to be concerned about and be aware of is that with AI, automation, and all the things that are coming, it's basically going to be automating just about everything that humans can do.
Yeah.
Certainly intellectually, in terms of data analysis, and a lot of these kind of remote rote memory types of things that we used to need to know how to do, you know, in previous generations. And so everything that's really left after technology deals with is going to start taking on all of these different abilities in the workforce is our human skills.
Yeah.
And the way to look at it, I love this, is Vivian Ming, who's a doctor and out in Silicon Valley, a neuroscientist. She has a saying where she says, you know, technical skills, which by the way are changing all the time, they're basically tools. So you can learn technical skills, and you're going to have to learn a lot of new technical skills.
Well, they're really cost of entry now, aren't they?
Exactly. So you're going to have to learn them, but they're changing all the time, the shelf, because of the pace of disruption. So you'll have to learn one and then another. But here's the thing. A tool, like a technical skill, without a craftsman or woman is pointless. It's like, what's a paintbrush without a Picasso? Mm-hmm. So you can have all these tools, but if you don't know how to apply them, if you don't know how to integrate them into your work, if you don't know how to be creative with them, how to have emotional intelligence so you can share them and communicate them with others, it's really pointless. And that's what's left. That's really what we need to focus on for the future of work.
So let me ask you this, because I hear what you're saying, and I totally agree with you. And I never really thought of it as like, it's not so much the tools, but how you use them, specifically creatively applying them. I think a lot of people get trapped in, both leaders making these decisions and younger people in the workforce too, get trapped in, this tool is going to make me obsolete, or this is going to replace my value. How do you get people out of that mindset of seeing it as an either or?
Well, I think, you know, the data, which is that whatever tool you've, the data is very clear. So one is the half-life or the shelf life of skills today, of technical skills, are about 2-3 years, meaning you could learn something in as a freshman, which becomes redundant by the time you're a senior. Yeah. So don't get stuck up on the skills. The company is going to teach you the skills. You can learn it. It's about your ability to learn, which is more important than the knowledge itself. So I'd say that's one thing about not getting stuck on the skill. The other thing is that when we look at the data around success, it turns out that how intelligent you are, your IQ, and your technical skills only account for 25% of your long-term success. So again, intelligence, IQ, technical skills, only 25%. Takes you to first base. 75% of a person's long-term professional success depend on three simple things: your mindset, your emotional intelligence, and your ability to handle stress and adversity. That's the game. And so for any person, young person or otherwise listening out there, the real game you need to focus on are those human capacities which allow you to learn new skills and take the skills you know and apply them better. I'll give you another example.
Yeah.
Students that are learning to become doctors, so doctoral students that are, you know, going to become actual, you know, doctors in out there in hospitals, et cetera. What's the difference between a doctoral student that gets 60% on all their exams and a doctoral student that gets 100% on all their exams?
I'm going to venture, given what you just said, I'm going to venture to say nothing. It's the other things that determine it.
You got it. Exactly. They're both called doctors, right? Both called doctors. And the doctor you're going to want to see is the one that has more empathy, the one that cares, that you have chemistry with, soft skills. You don't care that the other doctor has this great diploma from Ivy League and that he or she, you know, is a straight A, you know, student. The fact that the one doctor has those skills that can connect with you and have empathy and really cares about your condition, that's the doctor you're going to go see.
You know, it's funny that you use that example because I just, I had a primary care doctor that I absolutely loved. And I loved him because he would sit down, pull up his stool and be like, hey, how's it going? Like, look at me right in the eyes, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he was so amazing. And then he left, I couldn't find him. And then I found him, he's now concierge. And I stalked him until he let me in his practice because he was actually full. So I was like, I must get back with you. Now, I don't know if he got 60% or 100%. He's a good doctor. Obviously, there's a baseline to medicine that you have to follow. But your example really, I think there are a lot of examples in life that really prove the case of if you think about the leaders that you like, the businesses that you follow, the people who are successful. And it's rare that you say, well, they don't have any soft skills. They're just really good at like knowing this, right?
Exactly.
It's all the other things. So I think you kind of answered it, but can we talk a little bit about, all right, so now that we know that there's this whole work from home, work in the office, like the whole work thing is obsolete as a benchmark. What are those soft skills that we need to have moving forward so that we can be successful?
Well, I think, you know, I'll start with mindset and EQ. So, you know, let's look at EQ, for example. So, and dig into that. So the basis of all relationships, business or otherwise, is connection. All people really want is connection.
Yeah.
But to have established connection, and today it's very hard because we're all bombarded by so many people. It's hard to trust people because you're getting emails and LinkedIn messages and this and that. And how do you trust somebody? How do you develop that trust and connection? And the only way to do that is through empathy, listening, and learning how to show someone that you actually care about who they are, what their problems, issues, dreams are. And when you can show somebody that their goals matter to you, then you will matter to them. And so EQ, for example, I mean, the ability to communicate everything that's standing in between anyone, between you and your dreams and your goals, is your ability to work with, mobilize, and connect with other people. Yeah. So people skills remains the number one thing, together with mindset, which is, you know, you may have great technical skills and you may even take action and try to apply those skills. But if you don't believe that you're capable of some great goal or change or result, it's not going to happen. And that belief, that inner belief, is actually what separates a lot of the great achievers from everybody else as well.
So I got a couple questions for you, and I got one from the audience I want to get to. But before I do that, you said something in there really important, which was about, it's about mobilizing as well. What were the things you said? It was, say it again.
I think to connect with, mobilize, and you know, influence and connect with people.
Yeah. So I was listening, but then you said so many other great things that I got all that stuff. But the mobilizing, I want to take a second and pause on, because I think that's really important. I think we undervalue the importance of getting other people to willingly take action to help you and everybody move forward. So we think about being charismatic. We think about being likable. We think about being influential in the sense of, like, you know, people listen to us, but we forget about the mobilizing part and how important I think it is to actually have a voice that drives people to action. And I think that takes time. I think some people are more like a little better at it, but I do think that is a skill you can learn.
Absolutely. So you touched upon even likability, for example.
Yeah.
Is the key to, you know, the more likable you are, the more trust and connection you develop. So studies have shown that if somebody is more, 6 times more willing to buy something you're selling if they like you, right? Likability in the courtroom, for example, if you're a lawyer, is crucial to get, you know, we know that human beings, we're emotional beings. We think we're logical.
Yeah, we're
logic
not.
Makes us think, emotions make us act. And juries, people in sales, it's all about how you make someone feel, and likability is a key component of that.
So,
and you can develop that by, yeah.
No, keep going.
I mean, you can develop likability, for example, by just learning some basic things. One is listening. So, you know, there are studies that have shown that, you know, just by getting people to tell you their stories and open up and listen to them makes them feel, it lights up the same parts of the brain as though the person just made more money, had great food. And in some studies, even the same areas of the brain light up as having, you know, just after sex.
Yeah.
So just people want to talk, people want to open up and share. And having that ability to listen to people is often a great way to just build connection and be likable.
You know, it's funny. My parents used to make fun of me because if I went to the mall, I came back with the full stories of 3 people. Mm. Like if I was sitting at the food court as a kid, like somehow, right? Like I would get the full story. Mm. But I feel like later on in life, that ability to really hear, listen to people and not listen to speak, because that's a different thing, but actually listen and hear them has been one of my greatest talents, for lack of a better way to say it. I have a lot of weaknesses too, but like that one, I think it actually really helps. And I think we, again, underestimate that value of just listening to someone else. And is it Robert Greene has that book? I was just looking to see if I had it around, about like, you know, when Bob left the room, I thought he was the smartest person in the room. When Elon left the room, I felt like I was the smartest person in the room. And that to me is listening.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's a great example. Yes. Yeah. So there's, you know, listening is one way. The second way, I think, to, you know, if you want to, this goes back to mindset more, perhaps in terms of, mobilizing people, is certainty and clarity of purpose. It's a very uncertain world and everybody's looking for certainty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's always the person that has the most certainty in what they're saying and in their argument that wins over the conversation influences. So you look at leaders or states, you know, people that lead, they may not even say things that are true, but when they say it with such conviction and clarity, it's like, wow, I want to believe that because I don't know the answer. They seem to know what they're doing. Yeah.
And here's the thing I find about that. I'm glad you brought that up. I don't think that means the most boisterous person in the room. Mm. But I think there's a confidence that can be exuded that doesn't have to be loud. I find that the most boisterous knows the least in what they're doing,
yes,
what they're talking about. Like if they're sucking the air out of the room, chances are you don't want to follow them. And I think conviction comes in a lot of different forms. And sometimes it's a little quieter, but you know it when you see it and when you see that person.
100%. I think it's something it's an intangible thing we human beings can pick up on that's kind of subliminal, but it's there. And, you know, I think it goes a long way to having a clear sense of purpose and why.
Yeah.
And one of the things we work with anybody, particularly young people, is helping them define and refine where they're going and why. Because once you know that, then it's all about execution. When you exude that kind of clarity, like this is what I want to do, this is why I'm doing it, you magnetize and attract people in your sphere.
Yeah.
And so that's a really important thing to develop, is that clarity of purpose.
And it's been my experience, I'd love to get your perspective on this, that with clarity and purpose, it's important that we constantly revisit it. I feel like it's very, you know, you're watching the video, I'm like trying to make a straight line here, but it's very easy to drift. And if you let yourself drift too far, it gets really hard to come back, and you start to feel really like lost or out of alignment or you're lacking in that purpose. I think drift is normal. But I think the key is to make sure that you are course correcting your way back on a regular basis.
Yeah. No, I think each of us, it's important to every day, if you can, you know, you remind yourself, you know, why am I doing this? What do I really want? I mean, these are big questions that take a lot of time to answer. I think the challenge for young people, especially in this noisy world where there's so much cultural influence and parental and familial and all that, is to find that signal in the noise and really figure out, is this my voice or the voice of my parents or culture? And it takes a lot of introspection. It takes and it takes some trial and error. But I think once you, and it takes action, because you got to experiment and try and really feel, and you'll kind of know it. My litmus test for kind of figuring out that you found your passion, your purpose, is when you fail at it, and you fail at it, but you keep following it.
Yeah, but you keep going.
That's when you know you found that thing. Yes.
Where do you think a soft skill like innovation, that ability to adapt, pivot, think really, just overall think differently, where does that fit into the soft skills as you see it?
Well, creativity and innovation today is probably, you know, when you look at even the data out there and what companies are looking for, it's probably the number one thing is the people that can think, create, innovate, not just groupthink. Because that's like everything in the world today, from this pen to the computer, this microphone, your shirt, you know, everything is created in somebody's mind first. Yeah. Everything is created in the mind. But if we don't have people that are thinking independently and creatively, we can't create and bring new things to the world. So creativity is where it's at, is where it's at. It's one of the key soft skills. And I think one of the things that I love sharing with people is well, and it's not an easy journey, but it's about finding your own voice and your own thought process. To do that, you've got to separate in some ways from people, places, powers, and ideas that define you. Mm. Because everything that defines you also confines you. And, you know, I feel like we need to, even when you're in a company and you know, there's that initial moment when you join the company, you're seeing things as an outsider. But then when you're there for a year, two, three, you start just having that group think and you lose that outside perspective. And there are ways to keep cultivating that freshness. And I think, you know, taking breaks, taking vacations, leaving the tribe in different ways and leaving that group think is really important to kind of maintain your and meditation. And there are a lot of rituals you can do, which are really helpful to maintaining that outsider individual perspective.
So I'm going to add to that, and I got a question for you. The thing that I find fascinating too is when new people come into organizations, the people who are already there, the ones who are more groupthink are already there, try to pull them into the groupthink versus leveraging their naive intelligence. And I think we miss a huge opportunity for innovation, to stay fresh, to get new ideas and thinking into the organization, because instead of saying, oh, Ilan, I would have never thought of it that way. Why would you have done it that way? Even if you go that way or not, it doesn't matter. We don't. Instead, we go, oh, no, Ilan, that's not how we do that. So why don't you come do it my way?
Yes, you're so right. And I think it comes from sometimes, unfortunately, insecurity, because here's like the new person and what do they know? And here's how we've done it. And, you know, you kind of base your identity and your reality based on how you tend to do things. Now someone's challenging that and it makes you feel uncomfortable. So it takes a leader and managers and teams who have that inner strength and creativity themselves to try new ways and embrace someone that's coming in and their perspective.
So let me ask you a question, because you said what defines you can also confine you, if I got that right. Will you give me a real tangible example of that? Because that's one of the things that it's kind of like some of the memes I see on Instagram. I'm like, yes, but I'm like, well, how does that really translate into real life? So give me some examples of that.
Okay, so I'm going to share with you, this is really exciting stuff for me. I'm writing a book about this called The Initiation, and it's about—
I'm glad I asked that.
it's a great question. And so I'll give you an example. Look at the greatest innovators of all time, real, mythical, you name it, and throughout history, have gone through a process that involves separating from defining forces in their lives. So let's look at, for example, an innovator like Steve Jobs. Classic story of separation. He separated, he didn't know his biological parents. So he essentially was separated from his parents, grew up with different parents, with foster parents, right? It was adopted. And then he left his parents to go study in university. So another separation, which most people do, but then he dropped out of school. He separated from university and college to drop into the classes he really wanted to take, calligraphy, for example.
Which were they made no sense to other people.
Exactly, made no sense. And he was literally living like as a homeless person on his friend's couch because he didn't have an apartment. When he finished college, he then leaves and separates from the United States, and the whole world that defined him to go to India, to travel to India in search of enlightenment and answers. And he didn't necessarily, that changed him in many ways. He came back a different person. He didn't find the specific answers, but maybe he found that the answers were within himself. And he came back changed with a different perspective, and he started Apple with Steve Wozniak. And then at the height of Apple, he was had the forced separation from the company that he created. And in that kind of exile, in that separation from the company he founded, he develops Pixar and Next, which become the foundational technologies for Apple when he eventually returns to it. And he himself says that that separation was the key and the cornerstone to his ability to innovate and recreate Apple and himself. And I think when you look at the greatest leaders and innovators, they all tend to be folks that in some ways leave the tribe, become the outsiders, because the outsiders always tend to be, then later on become the insiders. The margins move to define the mainstream. Because when you're caught in the middle of a system, a business, a culture, a tribe, you can never see, you can never have the perspective of the in a more complete way. And when you're on the outside, you see the system, but you see other systems and you can start connecting the dots.
That's so great. So I have a question that I want to ask. It's so appropriate right now that we just got in from the audience, which is, I love this exclamation point. How do I know? Wait, I got my glasses on. I can't see without my glasses anymore. How do I know if I've become too, in quotes, mainstream and I need to get out of the tribe? Are there signs that tell me it's time to do some shifting and then come back?
Well, sometimes, yeah, it's a great question. Great question. Love that question. I think there are two things. Sometimes when we delay leaving, then life kind of throws us something, you know, a real curveball and brings us a challenge. It kind of forces us and jolts us into separating. So we don't always have to get to that point. But I think when you feel, when you kind of feel like you're losing your spark, you're losing your energy, you're losing that freshness, and it's something you just individually feel, that's of course the time. And I think it's also requires pushing ourselves a little bit. I think you always, when you're feeling too comfortable, when you're feeling too safe, when life is too predictable, that's when you want to make changes.
Like you're almost on autopilot.
Yeah, when it's like, oh, okay, things are good. I'm in a nice relationship and things are nice. And but you don't feel like you're growing. You don't feel like you're learning. You don't feel like you're developing. That's the time to say, you know what? I want to expand. I want to grow.
So I'm going to add one to that, at least for me, from my experience, is that when I stop getting excited about my wins, when, you know, like we land a new client, we get an amazing guest, we get a new sponsor. Like those are all things I'm normally really excited about, small and big. But there are moments where I catch myself where I get into this lull of being like, all right. And that's when I know I need to venture out a little bit and shake things up a little bit, because I've lost the joy out of it too.
Now that's a great, great point. I love that. Like thinking about when you're not excited about the wins.
Yeah, the thing you should be excited about.
Yes, yes, yes. And the thing is, and it really goes back to, I believe that the game of life, the way to grow, is stepping into tension. Because when you separate from your comfort zone, when you separate from your tribe and you're kind of in exile, it's uncomfortable because you're in a new space, you're with new people. That means you got to step into tension. The human brain wants to avoid that because we want to feel comfortable and safe and not feel threatened. But the only way to grow emotionally, spiritually, physically, mentally is to step into tension. When you're working out in the gym, it's only when your muscles are feeling stress and strain and tension, that's when they're growing. It's not when you're just feeling fine and just like lifting weights when nothing's happening.
Yeah.
And so we need to continually, you know, so I'll give you another example in nature. The seed can make nothing of its potential, can't manifest its potential unless it separates from its source. And it's when it's buried in the darkness and depths of the earth with all that resistance and tension of the earth packed up against it that allows it the opportunity to then, you know, blossom, break through, bud, and grow. Trees need the wind blowing against its branches in order to deepen its roots in the ground so it can grow and higher and reach for the stars. So in nature, not, you know, trees, animal, we needs resistance and tension to grow. The same with human beings, same with our minds, our emotions. We need to experience a little bit of tension.
So I got another great question in for you from the audience, which is, can I create many tensions in my day-to-day, like putting myself on a challenging project, speaking to people that make me feel uncomfortable, or that I'm just scared of, AKA my leadership team? Are there ways for me to do this without blowing up my life? Excellent question.
Excellent question.
I'm going to go there, yeah.
In fact, that is the way to do it. You want to do it gradually, because if you take on way too much, you go into like the panic zone, you can the breakdown zone. So you want to go into the stretch zone, which is these little tiptoeing and putting your toes into tension. So yes, so talking to people that make you a little bit uncomfortable, or having a difficult conversation, or stepping up when your tendency is not to, doing things that make you a little bit tense, that's exactly what you need to do. Yes.
I love it. And I say for the person that asked that, go do it. That's great. Yes. All those things were, sounds like there's probably a challenging project out there for you. So go do it. I want to ask a couple other questions. I'm kind of looping around a little bit, but is there a skills gap that is affecting business? Like, is there one, when you look at the trends, are there ones that, hey, if we don't really dial these up as in the business world, it's causing, I guess, negative consequences?
110%. And it is, you know, kind of looping back to everything we just talked about and going back to soft skills. So there was a survey out from Gallup in 2019 that said that, you know, employers feel that graduates are not prepared for the, or are not prepared for success in the workforce because they lack the fundamental soft skills. 75% today of HR professionals feel that, or executives feel that their companies are in jeopardy, the future of their companies, because young professionals that are joining and future leaders lack the kind of soft skills that are needed. So it really goes back to these human people skills. So the problem is that at the very time in history when these skills are needed the most, because of automation, technology is actually eroding these skills in the next generation and all of us, because of our dependence and use of social media and technology. Schools and universities aren't teaching them. And so we have a trend where young people are entering the workforce simply unprepared, and it's not their fault.
Right.
Because this is the world they're growing, they're just, that they've inherited, right?
So let me ask you this then, because I totally agree with you. And like, I've got two boys, they're 16 and 12. I sometimes, I don't say worry, that's probably a little too strong, but I sit back and I go, whoa, we really need to work on like active listening and empathy, and because they're living in a world of TikTok. And I love TikTok for the creative expression that it's allowed. Yeah. So I'm not against social media at all. But I look at that as their basis for how, that's their input, right? That's the stimulus coming in. And now that they've been remote for a year, they're back in school now, now it's summer, but you know, they then lost that connection. So if you've got a new, that's kind of a personal example, but I see this with a newer generation when we go to hire people, we do interviews. If you've got a group of people, to your point, who don't have these skills, not because they can't, but because they haven't been taught them, how do you then take those first steps to get them to strengthen those skills?
Well, it's a process, and for being is you know, taking a young person through that process, and it takes a little bit of time, not a lot of time, but it really, you know, so you work on getting a person to align with that strategy and realize that, yes, you want to be successful. Well, this is the way to be successful. If you want to be successful in whatever you do, this is the roadmap for doing it. That's one. And then the second thing is just helping them defining their purpose, which is really important. But beyond that is exercising those skills. And there are things that we do, simple things, which all involve stepping into tension.
Yeah. Can you give me an example of one? Like, if I could do one tomorrow, what would you tell me to do? Especially, let's just think around empathy and listening, because I think to me, that's the biggest one that with all of our devices, which I am also annoyingly connected to, that's the one I think we lose the most, because we're always we're always down, you know?
Yes. So let's see. One of the things, so in general, we it's all about habits, because everybody we're working with is that knowledge is not power. So you can learn a lot of stuff with us, but that doesn't mean anything, because knowledge is only power in potential. Common sense is not common practice. you and I, Tamara, woke up this morning and we knew that it's good to meditate. It's good to do yoga, good to have goji berries and walnuts and a green smoothie and matcha tea.
That was not my
morning. Of us doing that was the morning, right? So the fact that we know what we need to do doesn't make us do it. What makes us do stuff is habits. We're creatures of habit. And so if we want to change human behavior, we have to go down to the level of habits. And one of the things that we kind of really work hard with anyone is how do we start introducing into your life very small habits that can incrementally have major and over time have major significant exponential impact on your life. So for example, the worst thing you can do in the morning, and we all kind of know this, when you wake up is pick up your cell phone and especially look at the news. In fact, studies have shown that looking at 3 minutes of news in the morning, if you look at 3 minutes of news in the morning, you're 30, which we all tend to do, you're 30% more likely to say you had a bad day at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I give the analogy, it's kind of like you wake up and your first instinct is to go to the garbage, open it up and take a whiff. Right?
You know,
why would you do that? But we do that because it's just our habit. When your mind, you know, your morning is your hour of power. It's when your mind is most receptive and creative and engaged and focused and calm. That's your time to think about your goals, think about your agenda, things that you want to do to move your needle forward, and not start looking at emails and looking at texts and kind of getting your mind onto the news and things which are just going to sap your energy.
Excuse me.
So as an example, of a simple habit that can have somebody's long-term well-being and focus and productivity.
So I appreciate kind of what you're talking about, the fact of make it a habit. And I think if you look at the really successful people in life, they just have a series of really good habits. That's
exactly.
It. Exactly. It's actually not that complicated, but it does take work to build those habits. I want to ask you before we run out of time about micro-credentials. I found that really fascinating, and I'd love for you to explain what that is and then kind of give us some examples.
Sure. So micro-credential is basically a short certificate or something you can put on your resume. It's a certificate or a kind of a small credential that can be done, let's say, over a couple of week program, for example, like 6, 7, 8, 9 week program or 9 workshops that give you a little bit, give you a skill, for example, a technical skill or a soft skill. And the reason they're becoming so important today is that degrees no longer matter like they used to. I mean, they're important, but knowledge is not, it's about the skills, right? And so beyond that, you may go to a good school and you may have a nice degree, but what's going to separate you in the eyes of an employer on your resume, when they look at your resume, is if you have an extra micro credential underneath or with your degree. Well, now you've done something that shows the employer that you've invested in a certain skill. You have this extra skill. So that micro credential can be in, again, a technical thing and a programming and, whatever it is, or we have our certificate at Devon Academy in soft skills, and employers and HR leaders are giving more and more significance to that because they're always looking for ways the added value and the added skill sets that a young person or anybody has when they come for a job.
Do you think that those skills, well, let me ask this a different way. If you're new to your career, I think a certificate shows that if I'm hiring, to me, that shows a couple things. One is they understand the value of soft skills and they have some of it, which I think I would agree with you. I think is essential. I think it always has been. We only now just understand it.
Yes.
But the second thing I think it shows is that you're willing to invest in yourself. So I think when you're new to your career in particular, I think you really do need to show, hey, I'm willing to invest in myself. I believe in my career. I believe in my potential. I'm not going to wait for you to like tell me what I need to work on. And actually I have a question for you. As I just said, that just popped into my head. Everything that you're saying makes me think that our performance review structure, not me at Launch Street, but just in general, is pretty outdated as well, because reviews tend to go by goals and outcomes and not by behaviors and skills. And I would assert that if you have the behaviors and the skills, the outcomes will come. Sometimes you make mistakes, sometimes you have failures, but the outcomes will come. How do you see performance reviews changing, given what you're saying, which is really about things that you can't say. I made X dollars, I landed X clients, right? That's the hard outcome.
I think, you know, you're absolutely right. Although I do think that you can start, you know, there is a lot of data to show that if you develop certain skills, we're actually working on that ourselves to show how an individual, after developing certain skills, outcomes, performance changes. So we've had many of our kind of graduates or learners get promotions, get raises, and they will attribute it as a direct result of the program and things they learned. So I think that, yes, you know, employers are looking at other things in terms of behavior, engagement, motivation, self-motivation initiative. But more times than not, those kind of soft skills and behaviors will lead to better outcomes as well.
Yeah.
So I do think they're connected, but they shouldn't only be looked at. I think, you know, employers definitely should also be looking at just kind of those, some of those intangibles as well.
Yeah, and I'm a really big fan. We do this a lot at LaunchRoot, and I talk about this in innovation, but I'm a huge fan of rewarding behaviors when they happen. So like if we're having a meeting and I see someone really listening and seeking to understand the other person's point of view, I want to acknowledge that in the moment, because that's a behavior I want more of. I mean, we're human, we're animals. So we need kind of that initial. And so I guess my issue with performance reviews is like, why am I waiting 6 months to be told how I'm doing? But also I think to your point about soft skills, like if I said, hey, Elon, great job in the meeting, really listening to Tamara and kind of seeking to understand where she's coming from, that also is then modeling to everybody else in the room. Oh, I saw him do it. Now I know what that looks like and I can improve it too. So I don't know where I was headed with that, but I thought it was important to say.
No, great point. I think getting that immediate feedback actually is super important for everybody involved and certainly for the person that's exhibiting the behavior. So yeah, I think right on. Yes.
And I think for those of us on the varsity team, been in business a little bit longer, I think it's really important that we take that on as part of our role because, you know, to your point with the younger workforce, like they haven't been taught it. We are now trying to teach them. I have another question from the audience that says, sure. Can you fix a bad mindset? I've got a few people on my team who I'd say don't come to work with the best mindset. I feel like it's fixable, but what are your thoughts on that?
110%.
It's fixable.
I've seen it time and again.
Yeah, I agree.
It is so fixable. The way to do it, I mean, is always a way to do it is find, everybody's got a motivator. You find what motivates somebody. What is it that they want? And you meet them there and you show them that if you can do X, it's, you know, you kind of dig into those and tap into those motivators and connect it to their work, connect it to their, you know, what they're doing, to their why. And usually it is their why. You can get the best out of people. So mindset can, I've seen it. Everyone has a potential to change their mindset. It can start now. It takes time because we tend to get kind of relapse into the old mindset, but with constant kind of reinforcement. And what we do is we get people also into groups and pods and accountability partners where they're kind of motivating and helping mindset when that tends to slip back.
And do you think that sometimes...
But yes, it is totally... just lost you there. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I lost you for a second. I interrupted you accidentally because I lost for a second. So it's fixable. Well, I totally agree with you. And in fact, that's part of my frustration with Carol Dweck's work and how people take it and say you're either fixed or growth. And I don't think that's right. I don't think that's what research really now shows. I also think that's a closed mindset on yourself of like that person's not fixable. I think sometimes too, don't you think that it's situational? Meaning like I'm jaded at work. So I come across as very close-minded at work, but if you looked at me and the things that I'm passionate about outside of work, I have a whole different mindset and approach.
Exactly. And it goes back, as you said it, they're motivators, right? You have this, you're this new person outside of work because now your mind, you're connected to things that you're motivated to, to your deeper why, yourself. The mind is, you know, I think the advantage of is that the younger you are, the more neuroplasticity there is with your mind, the easier it is to change. Of course, you can still change, you know, people much older can change, but it just gets a little bit harder because those wirings are there.
A playlist has been there for a long time.
Exactly. And it's hard to give up. But I think, you know, William James, I think a famous psychologist said that, you know, one of the greatest discoveries of our generation is that people can change their life by changing their attitude and their mindset. And I think that that is so true.
It is so true. And I've never met someone successful who has said, who hasn't said, I work a lot on myself. It's always in some way part of it, whether they do it in a way that I agree with or not, that is part of their thing. Hey, I have a question for you about stress, because I think, you know, undoubtedly we have a lot of stress in our lives. And while COVID is kind of behind us, I wouldn't say it's totally, it has shifted a lot of things, and we've been dealing with stress, like just as an underlying current in our work and our lives for a long time. So I'm curious, just with all the work around soft skills and mindset, if you have any suggestions for how do we help minimize the stress? Because as you know, and for those listening, so you know, the challenge with stress is it keeps us in our primal brain. So it keeps us from reaching those higher thinking, or all those soft skills that Elon's talking about that are so important get harder to access because our primal brain is in a frenzy trying to just like stay safe. So how do we minimize that so people can get to that better place?
Great question. I think two points. One is that I would want to point out that some stress is actually good, because stress is a ball of energy, really. It's like this energy that can be harnessed one way or the other. And sometimes good stress, for example, which involves stepping into tension, now that's a good kind of stress. The stress we want to avoid or minimize and manage is the stress that we just generate from our mind, overthinking, overanalyzing. And what happens, what stress really is at the end of the day, is our mind going to the future, thinking about, you know, possible negative scenarios, what we might lose, what people might say, or going to the past and resisting the present moment. Stress is resisting the present moment.
Okay.
What is? And the moment you accept what is, let's say you're in a traffic jam, well, there's nothing you can do about it. You can stress, and you know we often do, but if you accept, all right, I'm in this traffic jam, and you kind of bring yourself back to the moment, out of that future past thing and into the moment, that's the quickest way to reduce stress. So two examples or two ways to get out of your mind into your body, into your heart, as I call it. One is the fastest way to change stress is to get into motion. Motion changes emotion. So by changing your biology and your physiology, you change your psychology. So that's one. So one example is just get your heart rate up for 10 minutes a day. That's the number one thing you can do to reduce stress and promote well-being on a daily basis. The second thing, and this is so simple, is like, I'll ask you a question. How long can a human being survive without eating?
I don't know, but I know it's longer than water and longer than we would ever guess. How's that?
Yes. So it is longer than water. It's 21 days.
I mean, that's a long time.
Which is a long time. That's the average human being can survive without eating for 21 days. How long can the average human being survive without drinking?
Water?
Yeah.
It's not long, right? It's like, I don't know, 48 hours. No, am I right?
Close. Yeah, 3 days. Three days on average. Yeah. So 3 weeks not eating, 3 days not drinking. How long can you survive without breathing?
Not.
Three minutes. Exactly.
I was going to say for me, probably 45 30 seconds.
Me too. Maybe Michael Phelps a bit longer, but you know, like three minutes on average. And so the point is that our breath regulates our life. And we know that when we're stressed, we're breathing in a certain way. When we're calm, we're breathing, of course, more deeply, more rhythmically. And so by simply taking control of your breath, you take control of your mind and your stress. So there are many simple ways. One thing I do before, you know, I was encouraged to do before any big call, big meeting, big anything, take three deep breaths. And just kind of let it, and you just see how that changes and reduces the stress. Simple things like that can make a difference.
You know, I have this phrase that I teach all of our Academy members, which is so simple. And the phrase is, tell me more, because when you get into fight or flight, when you get into stress and you don't know what to do and your brain's scrambling and you're sweating because someone asked you, this is, I think this is really important too for the younger generation to hear. when like somebody asks you a question you weren't expecting, or you're put on the spot in a meeting, or saying to you, huh, interesting question, tell me more, gives me three breaths. It's based on what you said, the three breaths.
Nice. I like that.
Talk more. So now I really learn what you really want to understand, like where you're coming from. Now I'm listening, but also I have a chance for three breaths, because I think what you're saying is so important. And I would just, this is so random, but you know, just the other day I was having a conversation with my partner about snakes, and I'm petrified of snakes, and there's a lot on his ranch, and it scares the crap out of me. And we looked at my heart monitor thing after the conversation. My heart rate had shot up, and I think, and realized what you're saying is I stopped breathing. You know, I was like, like I didn't even know I was doing it. So there's such an awareness around your breath that we have to have. Yeah, because I was like, like panicking just in a conversation, by the way. So it just goes to show you, it's not just when someone jumps out at you, it is in our day-to-day life that your point about breath really matters.
Yes, yes. And you know, and it goes back to the simple things. And so again, habit, if you can get into the habit of after, you know, every hour of work and just, you know, doing some getting your, this is really in the mind. It's about getting out of the mind, into the body, into the heart, into the breath, that will reduce stress.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of movement and motion. I love what you said about motion reduces stress. And even if that motion is write down your to-do list, right? To like do something, anything. I am a big, I'm guilty of projecting into the future and panicking in the present. Which is just, it doesn't help anybody, especially not me. And I have to really work on that, because I'm constantly like, oh, this is going to stress me out, but I haven't even experienced it yet. It's funny
how it's a constant, constant battle. I mean, I can relate. I can relate as well.
So, hey, we're almost out of time. So let me just, before I ask you the last question, is where can people go to connect with you, learn more about the Academy, all that?
So absolutely, you can visit us at www.devoneacademy.com. The spelling is behind me. And this is a great time. You know, we do a lot of obviously coaching and work with groups and with individuals. I think the summer is a great time, especially if you're a student before school, to kind of really take things by the horns. So feel free to, you can email us also at consultation@devoneacademy.com. So consultation@devoneacademy.com. And happy to offer, we offer a half an hour free consultation to kind of learn about your needs and what we do.
Oh, that's great. That's very generous. I will put all those links in the show notes. So the last question I have for you is, if I am a junior varsity person in the workforce, like I'm getting into it, I'm getting my feet under me, what do I need to do to stand out in this highly competitive marketplace? What advice would you give me to really make my mark? So that like whatever this is I'm passionate about, I can really pursue.
So how to stand out? What I like, you know, sharing with people is the biggest commodity today in the workforce, in the world, is not time, it's not money, it's attention. How do you get people's attention? How do you get people to take notice of you? And that requires, of course, EQ. It requires the ability to connect. And it requires, one of the things that's often overlooked is storytelling.
Yeah, storytelling is so important.
The ability to tell your story. Tell me about yourself. So that answering that proverbial question, like, tell me about yourself. And knowing how to do it in a way that will, you know, get you to connect with someone. Yeah. To be able to share information, communicate information in ways that, again, connect through stories. That is the way you're going to stand out. That's how you're going to be remembered and be remarkable in some way, because it's so hard today to capture attention. It's so hard to be remembered. There's so much noise that you've got to stand out through stories.
Yeah. Stories are, that could be a whole nother podcast right there.
Exactly.
I'm totally with you on that. And I think storytelling is an art. I started doing, you know, LinkedIn has all these great classes free. And I storytell for a living, but I wanted to get better. And I found some amazing stuff on there. So I'd say that to everybody out there to know that there's great free resources to help you with storytelling. The Hero's Journey is a great place to start. Of course, the book, I'll put that link in the show notes too. Ilan, I wish we had more time, but we are out. So thank you so much for joining me. I found this really insightful. It I hope all of you out there at Inside Launch Street are really thinking about your soft skills and how you can improve them, especially as Alon was talking about this ability to connect with people and empathy and active listening. And they really are the key to your success, whatever that is, however you define that. And I would venture to say that it takes, those things take practice and they take intention. They're not as natural as we think they are. And I think we often think we're listening way more than we are. So thank you for that.
No, thank you, Tamara. It's been an awesome, awesome discussion. Really a pleasure to connect. And I hope we'll have a chance to talk more in the future.
Me too.